Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with the stars, creators, and industry leaders keeping theater alive and bringing musical theater to screens near you during the pandemic. I'm your host, Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Ariana DeBose. The Tony-nominated actor got her start on So You Think You Can Dance before shifting to musical theater roles in Bring It On, Motown, Pippin, and of course, Hamilton, in which she played the pivotal ensemble role of the Bullet. Since then, she starred in A Bronx Tale and in Summer, the Donna Summer musical. And now, during the pandemic, DeBose has been having something of a moment on screen instead of on stage. First, we got a chance to revisit her work, or see it for the first time, in the filmed performance of Hamilton that hit Disney Plus in the summer. And now she's appearing in The Prom, Ryan Murphy's starry Netflix adaptation of the fan-favorite Broadway musical. Up next for her, a new musical series on Apple TV Plus, Schmigadoon, due to be released next year. And then, at the end of 2021, Steven Spielberg's much-anticipated new film adaptation of West Side Story, in which he plays Anita. DeBose is in the virtual studio with me to tell us all about that and more. Hey, Ariana. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, Gordon. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Feeling good. It's a little chilly where I am, but that's okay.
Yeah. So The Prom was a great big fan favorite for a lot of theater folks when it was running. The theater community really sort of fell in love with that show. Did you get a chance to see it while it was running?
Oh, darling. I saw it three times. I was a bit of a fanatic. I loved it. I saw it first with my sister, Adrienne Warren. Hmm. And I boohooed. Like, she had to like console me. I was just so overwhelmed and moved, and so many people on that stage that, you know, I've some of whom I've worked with, some I've taken dance class with, just contemporary colleagues having a blast, doing what they do best, and storytelling in a way that was so accessible to so many different types of people, because that audience, all three times that I saw it, the audience was filled with so many different types of people. And that was, it's always thrilling to me to see a piece on stage, whether it be in a Broadway house or a non-Broadway house, that has that kind of power, right? I think that was amazing.
Did you respond, you play in the Netflix version adaptation, you play Alyssa Green, who is the sort of not yet out girlfriend of the main character who just wants to take a girl to the prom but finds herself barred from doing so. What did you think of that character as you were sitting there? Did you respond in particular to it then? And how has that changed now that you played the role?
Oh, I absolutely responded to character of Alyssa in the Broadway production. Portrayed by Isabel McCalla, who identifies as a woman of color. And I was so taken with her. I thought what she was doing up there represented us so beautifully. And it was the first time that I had really seen a coming out journey with a face like mine, like ours, portrayed on stage. And that's what really got me, you know. I thought that was so, so special. And I remember sitting in the theater that night thinking, I'd love to be a part of this story one day, or this type, this family, this legacy. And then, you know, lo and behold, here comes Alexa Fogel and Ryan Murphy. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity, because I learned a lot through Alyssa, right? I myself identify as Afro-Latina. My mother is white. So I'm a trail mix of a lot of things. But through my lived experience, you know, coming out, whilst I didn't feel like I necessarily came out, I sort of just always was. It's hard to explain. I was really lucky that I had a mom who just let me be, you know. That's not the norm for everyone. And even moving to New York, I had more experience with prejudice or or systemic racism or oppression in that way. When I moved to New York as an out and proud woman that I didn't necessarily when I was growing up. So it was really interesting to me to have these different revelations about what it is to be young and go through the struggle of trying to find your voice and trying to seek the acceptance of the people that you love. Because like I said, that wasn't necessarily the experience I had. And it can be challenging in Black and brown communities. And I don't think there's anything wrong in acknowledging that, right? Mm. That there's still a lot of work to be done, even amongst ourselves, right? We're having so many fruitful conversations around, you know, racial injustice and prejudice and things, you know, any number of things. We live in the time of Me Too, you know what I'm saying? There's a lot of work to be done. And I love that in the manifestation of Alyssa Green and it through this body, and the manifestation of Mrs. Green through Kerry Washington, you get to see a Black family, essentially a single parent Black family, because you do not see her father figure in this story. You get to see the layers of how these two women have to find each other and make space for each other. And that's the gift of the prom, or at least my hope, that is the gift of the prom, that young people, whether you identify as a person of color or not, that you see a blueprint that coming out is complicated, it's bumpy, that there's bumps in the road, but the happy ending is still possible. That's what I love so much about our version of the story.
Yeah. You mentioned Kerry Washington, who plays Alyssa's mother, your character's mother, but she is one of just a number of, great, big, well-known actors, really talented, well-known actors who you are in that film with, including, you know, Meryl Streep and Nicole Kidman and Keegan-Michael Key and Tracy Ullman and James Corden. And the list just sort of goes on and on. What was that like for you to sort of work on that with a cast like that?
Oh, you know, it was fine. It wasn't that special at all, said nobody ever. I will say I'm very grateful that I had my Hamilton experience prior to making this movie, because with a show like Hamilton, you know, Hollywood came out in droves to see our show. And it did allow me to meet many of these people. Whether they knew they were meeting me, I knew I was meeting them. So it didn't make any difference to me. But it allowed me to get out some of those jitters ahead of time. I'm very grateful for that. So that when I did show up in Los Angeles to make this movie and arrive even in a rehearsal hall, not even on set, a rehearsal hall where Meryl Streep is sitting on a little bench, putting on her little Ladukas. I didn't necessarily feel like I was going to fall apart in front of her. I could at least make a coherent sentence. But it was a joy. I mean, I think my greatest takeaway from working with all of them, they're all so specifically excellent at what it is they do. They're craftsmen. They are not only surviving, they're thriving in Hollywood, but they are nice people. And to me, that was a big revelation, because I've always tried to lead with kindness and grace, because this is show business is hard. It ain't easy. It can bring out some colorful tones in a lot of folks. But to experience them in that way and to see that you can work hard, you can make an amazing product, you can be a legend, you can be Miss Meryl Streep or M. Streezy, as KW calls her, and still be nice and laugh with people. That was great.
Yeah. Speaking of Hamilton, we all got a chance to revisit the Hamilton, or for many of us, I'm sure, see it for the first time when it landed on Disney Plus over the summer. What was it like for you, you know, we all had our own experience. For those of us who saw the show, you know, back when it opened and has since, it was, you know, one thing for someone like me to revisit that show. What was it like for you to, you know, take a look at it and relive it that time?
You know, it was, it's hard to find words to describe the Hamilton experience anyways. But seeing the film, I think it allowed me to see the show from a different angle. You know, I went through several different challenges whilst I was doing the show. I had been injured a couple different times. So that had given me the opportunity to see the show. So I remember what it was like to experience it from an audience perspective. And I was moved. It was beautiful. It's everything that people say it is. But then to see it on film and to be able to zero in on the emotional life of these people, historical figures, many, all. And also it gave me the opportunity to go in and really, really get into the nitty gritty of my ensemble colleagues, right? It was like, wait, you were doing that? Or that silly little stupid thing we were doing in the corner that made it on the screen? Oh no, or yay, you know?
Right.
So it was as odd as it is, because I still think it's very strange to see yourself on screen. I don't know if I'm comfortable with it, but it was a wonderful experience to see all of these people to see the work that we put our heart and souls into in that way. It really was priceless. It reminded me of the blood, sweat, and tears, you know, because it was a journey made by the people for the people, and finally the people get to see it in this way. And it was nice to have, you know, so many of our Disney Plus audience, so many members of that audience did reach out and were like, oh my gosh, I get what you mean by the bullet, you know? Because I don't think the bullet is like an official character by any stretch of the mind. I don't think if you talk to our creative team, they would be like, yep, build, totally build.
Yeah. right.
But she does exist. And at the time when we were doing the show, I thought it was so special that Andy let the bullet be embodied by a human form. Because when you can imagine a person as a bullet, it changes the way you think about it, right? So for me as an artist, I took the opportunity to let that embody, you know, an omen of death. And what could that be like? It kept it interesting. So my shows were always intriguing. I as hard as that show was, I really enjoyed doing it. And part of that enjoyment came from the track.
Yeah. And what you found yourself in a position that, you know, every actor in a show that manages to become the massive success that Hamilton did, you find yourself in the position of like having this really good thing going, but knowing that at some point you're gonna want to and have to and have the desire to move on and, you know, do something else and try something different and show other sides of yourself. What's your memory of sort of negotiating that in terms of when did you time that? How did you time it? How did you know you were ready? How did you know the company was ready? Like, what was your thinking behind that?
You know, I on a personal note, I was in Pippin when I had sort of made an agreement with myself. I was like, okay, from after this show, you need to take steps to try for different things, to find a different challenge. Then Hamilton came along and I was like, okay, that's an ensemble track, but it is so worthwhile. You know what I mean? This type of show.
When you say you were looking for something, for a different challenge, you mean not necessarily an ensemble role. You were looking for something beyond an ensemble role.
Right. I had decided for myself that I wanted to challenge my skill set to see if I could book, you know, more featured roles or a leading lady role. Mm-hmm. and I wasn't sure that I could do it. So thank God Hamilton came along, gave me a little more time to like get up the courage to really set forth on that path. But what Hamilton did force me to do for myself was decide whether or not I wanted to cover or understudy with that job. And I actively chose not to. And that's something I had been doing on most of my jobs. I had chosen to understudy.
Yeah, you did didn't you do it for Pippin, if I remember correctly?
I understudied for Pippin. I took over very briefly. Yeah. But I understudied Diana Ross in Motown the Musical.
Right.
I understudied Danielle in Bring It On. Like, I was getting really good at doing that thing. Mm-hmm. But I don't like, I'm a person who doesn't like being pigeonholed. So I didn't want to keep just saying yes and then not feeling like I was truly being considered for something different. So that was the choice I ended up having to make with Hamilton. Everybody looked at me like I was crazy. Like, why wouldn't you want to do this? Why don't you want to cover Mariah Reynolds? And I was like, it's not about, right. the part. It's about my right. personal growth. So then, you know, I wanted to see it all the way through. You know, I think when you have an original Broadway cast, you want to be there for the Tonys. You want to be there for the cast album. You know, you want all those experiences. So I hung on as long as I could. And then I realized right around Tony time that this here body was not going to allow me to carry on much longer doing 8 times a week of Hamilton.
Right.
That's specific.
Right. That was a challenging physically role for you.
Oh yeah.
For anyone. I mean, yeah,
for anyone in that show, it is very hard to maintain that show for a year on your body. It's a full-time job. But I would wager to say, you know, Broadway performers, we're all athletes. We all have different skill sets. Like if you're a leading lady on Broadway, you're going to have to do a different thing to maintain than an ensemble member in Hamilton, but you're still maintaining and it's not easy. And it certainly isn't glamorous. I'm gonna tell you that.
right. Yeah. Did you have any? One of the things that I thought was so interesting about release on Disney Plus is it inspired this whole other conversation from people who'd either seen it before or not about historical accuracy and what is included and what is left out and how much you have time to include and what's important to include. What was your take on sort of it was a thing that, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda sort of welcomed, it seemed like, but I wonder what was your experience of sort of looking again at this show in a world that had been sort of really changed in the last, you know, several months before it came out.
Yeah, I mean, I really applauded Lin for how he took on that conversation, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is you have someone like Chris Jackson playing George Washington, and, you know, George Washington was a white man who owned right. slaves.
Right.
There are just certain facts there. But I think in regards to how we include, what we include, I do think having that conversation and opening up the door is, number one, the first step, right? I mean, you do have to suspend disbelief. This is a musical. And quite frankly, if you ask any audience member, I don't really think they want to sit there for more than 3 hours, right?
Right. Yeah.
So you got to figure out how to keep your audience engaged. And sometimes you do have to take liberties. Oh, you take liberties within appropriate reason. And again, art is subjective. That's what, that's like this whole conversation. It's a great conversation, but it's hard to zero in on what should and shouldn't be included in specifically a non-fiction story. I mean, you could ask the same question about Motown the Musical.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I mean, any story based on
who's telling the story, right?
Yeah.
It depends on whose perspective you're hearing or receiving this story from. The same thing about history books. My history books were written by white men.
Right.
So they're not talking about anything that happened in regards to people who look like me historically.
Right.
And I remember, this is so left field, but I remember in my history book, high school, AP history, there was like 2 sentences about the duel between Alexander Hamilton and Aaron Burr. That was it.
Huh.
And I was like, oh, then coming to do Hamilton, I was like, oh, this should have been a book in and of itself. Hashtag yeah. Ron Chernow.
Right. Yeah.
But it's an ongoing conversation. I don't know if I have a perfect answer to your question, but I think the fact that we're able
does anyone
to,
right now, right?
Probably not. Yeah. But I do think the fact that we're able to have the conversation about even acknowledging that maybe we've left some things out and we need to take better care at being more inclusive in the stories we tell and how we tell them. That is a step in the right direction.
Right. Yeah. I'll have more with Ariana right after the break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
And now, here's more with Ariana DeBose. Back in the before times, when, you know, maybe like last year, maybe around this time, or maybe a little after, when I was thinking ahead to Christmas of 2020, mm-hmm. I am someone who goes to see a movie musical, if it exists, on Christmas with my mother. And like, we had that movie, but we had West Side Story picked out. So like...
Yeah.
We were
so did we.
lots of theater folks were, you know, ready to see that movie this Christmas, but then, you know, everything happened. So we're gonna have to wait a year. But have you gotten a chance to see it yet?
No, I haven't. Mm. Gosh, I'm waiting on bated breath, really. Mm. But what I can say is, you know, in talking with Steven in the months following the wrap of the film, he has such a passion for this film. Yeah. He's so excited about it. He's excited about what we've made. And I say we very specifically because that's how he talks about it, what we've made.
Yeah.
There was a real spirit of collaboration. And just to tell you from what we experienced on set, that energy and some of the dance sequences, the capture on it. It's exciting, you guys. I can't wait. I'm very excited for you all to see it.
I'm very curious in particular about the dancing because that the you know, the Jerome Robbins moves are so sort of iconic, and Justin Peck did the choreography for this new Steven Spielberg version. What are these new moves like? Like, how do you characterize what this dance brings to the story and how it tells the story versus the choreography we all know?
You know, I think lots of things in there. Justin Peck is doing some of his best work with West Side Story. And he specializes in making ballet accessible because it becomes pedestrian in a way. And I think that quality that he has lent itself so beautifully to the storytelling of West Side Story, and in particular to Steven's vision, because the way that this is shot, it has such energy, such movement, such propelled forward motion. And Justin did a great job in capturing that. In addition, he does a beautiful job of paying homage to the original Robbins work and doing, because you cannot duplicate or recycle Jerry Robbins, you just can't, right? This does not attempt to do that. It just is respectful of it, right? And then allows the work that we are doing to take on a life of its own, which was really exciting for me because I come in and, as I think you can see, Gordon, I have very specific opinions about many, many things. But Justin became a great partner. Justin and his team, his wife, Patricia Delgado, so great and wonderfully collaborative to allow Anita to manifest within my body. And I would also go even further to say they really did their homework. You know, Justin was doing the research around these Latin dances to infuse Puerto Rican rhythms and authentic movement and dance styles like La Bomba, as opposed to, you know, just what we stereotypically believe to be Hispanic dance steps or rhythms. Like, he went for authenticity, and I was really proud of him. And that's the theme of the whole work, of the whole production, in my opinion. You know, we had Gustavo Dudamel conduct the LA Phil and the New York Phil for this movie. And the music is stunning, but it's authentic because we got the best. We got Gustavo, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. You know, we went as far as we could kind of in every direction to find the heartbeat of the culture. And the same within the Jet storyline as well. And I think you're going to be really, you and our audiences are going to be pleasantly surprised by how this reimagination of a classic story really gives you even more access to the characters and to the time they were living in.
Yeah. And what did, you know, West Side Story is a film and a musical many of us grew up with. Did you too grow up with West Side Story, and what did it mean to you, and what did particularly Anita mean to you?
I did grow up with West Side Story. I didn't quite, I'll be honest, when I was a kid, I didn't fully understand what I was watching.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And I'm talking childhood.
Yeah.
But I fully understood that there was a woman who had brown skin dancing in a purple dress who I wanted to be. I knew that. And then later on, I discovered she had a name, and her name was Rita Moreno.
Yeah.
And she was Puerto Rican. And my mother was like, she's like you. You're Puerto Rican. She is Puerto Rican. And I was like, oh my gosh. So it was one of the first examples that I had of seeing myself reflected on a television set. You know, I think those light bulb moments in a child's life are really, really important. Which is, you know, sort of now that I'm in this position as a woman who identifies as Afro-Latina and as queer, to hopefully represent that for young people who haven't traditionally had people who look like them or identify as they identify. Like, I hope I can, you know, at least provide a sliver of hope, you know, that, you know, it's possible to achieve this level of success, right? If you work hard, if you you seek out opportunity. There's nothing wrong with your ambition. That is something I do want to talk about. There is nothing wrong with ambition. There's a difference between being cold-blooded and leading with love. That's the conversation we need to be having.
Yeah.
But ambition, as our Vice President-elect Kamala Harris said in her first speech, ambition is a good thing. And if there's something you want and you're willing to work for it, go for it. Nothing should stand in your way. We have a BIPOC woman about to take office. That's exciting, y'all. I'm an Afro-Latina about to reimagine Anita and West Side Story in a time where Afro-Latinas are underrepresented in the entertainment industry. And I'm a queer, Black-presenting woman telling a coming-out story in a Ryan Murphy Netflix musical. That is thrilling to me. And it's something that I don't take lightly. I do feel tremendous responsibility for it, for these roles and the position that I'm in, but I want to have these conversations. I want to create more seats at the table. It's the time. At least yeah. I think it is.
Yeah. and you just finished a production on a future, another project you have been working on that is also a musical. Tell us a little bit about that for people who don't know much about it.
Yes, I just wrapped a musical comedy called Schmigadoon for Apple TV. Mm-hmm. I know. Schmigadoon.
It's,
yeah, right.
I mean, I love it. It's a
it's a series starring Cecily Strong from SNL, Keegan Michael Key. Mm-hmm. There's some other starry names like our queen Kristen Chenoweth and Alan Cumming, Fred Armisen, mm-hmm. Dove Cameron, Aaron Tveit, mm-hmm. myself, and Anne Harada, my darling Anne Harada.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Yeah.
And essentially a couple goes on a hike to reignite the flame in their relationship. And they find a magical town in the side of a mountain where people think they're in a musical. And it's great. It pays homage to everything that we are, to beautiful golden age musicals. That was particularly thrilling for me to have the opportunity to sing from the musical theater canon. Well, it's original music by Cinco Paul, mm-hmm. who is our writer and showrunner, but written in the style of, the time of the great Barbara Cook. I never mm-hmm. in a million years thought I would get the opportunity to even live my best Barbara Cook dream. And yet I did. I loved it. I had a fabulous time.
Excellent. And this, the podcast Stagecraft, my podcast, is part of the Broadway Podcast Network. And I should mention that you are also in an audio fiction podcast that is fairly new, also part of the Broadway Podcast Network, that is produced by one of the producers of the Prom Stage mm-hmm. Show and also the film called As the Curtain Rises. Are you having fun with that? That seems like you get to play a director choreographer who's very ambitious, speaking of ambitious.
Yes, she's fabulous. Her name is Zoe Taylor, director choreographer, and she is ambitious. And she's big picture. She fills in the details after the fact.
Right.
I'm having a blast doing it. Yeah. Dory and her team have been so great about making this all happen. Started out as like a passion pandemic project.
Right.
And it's turned into this wonderful, wonderful expression of joy and just hilarity, because some of it's utterly ridiculous and I'm living for it.
And so what else is on your plate now that you've finished wrapping production with that and you're working on the podcast? What else is ahead for you?
Right now I'm just enjoying the holidays with my family. Some well, in my opinion, well-earned downtime. I'm the queen of the hustle, so it's very hard for me to sit still. There are some things in the works that I'm very much looking forward to talking about in the near future, which will be really cool. It'll be a departure from what you've seen me do thus far, and I can't wait to share it with you.
Yeah. And so if you do have a bit of a break ahead of you, what are some of the things that are not work that have kept you going through the pandemic? What's been your new passion?
Tequila. Live. sort of. I do have a favorite tequila, though. Clase Azul. It's kind of expensive. It's less splurge, but it's definitely worth it. So all delicious. Right. Netflix. Mm-hmm. I've been watching a lot of Netflix. Queen's Gambit.
Sure.
The Crown. Yep. I'm really into period pieces right about now. I'm like, I want to see big scale production. I want to see use of color. I love it. Like, give me storytelling through color and set design, and I'm a happy camper. Mm-hmm. And also, those two projects I just specifically references, they don't really have an abundance of people of color in them, but
that is true.
They they inspire me to find the stories of those time periods that do. So I look to them for a source of inspiration, and then I go and I do a fair amount of research. So I'm building my arsenal. I'm not someone who sits still, like I said before. So I've always got something spinning up here, but I'm also finding ways to give back. I've joined the boards of two nonprofit organizations. I'm on the international board of Covenant Health, champion homeless youth and trafficked youth. I also sit on the board of AS4, which is a reproductive and abortion rights organization. So that has been fun too. It actually really has been fun and rewarding for me to kind of dig deep and fight for things I believe in. And Joellen and I are working on a new program that will also champion LGBTQ rights for young people and provide resources for them. So
this is your co-star in the prom, we should say. In case.
Yes, my co-star in the prom, Joellen Pellman, ladies and gentlemen, you get ready. She's taking over the world.
We look forward to watching the prom again. I saw a screener of it a couple weeks ago. Had a great time. Seeing West Side Story next year and Schmigadoon. And we really look forward to seeing you on stage again as soon as we are all able to be in the same room at the same time. It was great talking to you, Ariana.
You too, Gordon.
Yeah,
take care.
Thank you. Yeah. That was Ariana DeBose, now starring in The Prom, landing on Netflix December 11th. And of course, you can also catch her in Hamilton on Disney+. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft. You can find past episodes or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and on all the other pod places, including Spotify and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is another great place to find more theater for your ears. I'll be back in 2 weeks with another new episode. Thanks for listening, and see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.